to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, May 7th, 2017. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast today we have Peter Felicia and Jan Simpson. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books. His most recent is The Great Parade, which is available everywhere. His columns appear at MTI, Masterworks, Broadway, Broadway Select, and many other places. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Jan Simpson. Jan is the co-director of the Arts and Cultural Journalism Program at CUNY's Graduate School of Journalism and also writes for TDF Stages and American Theater. Jan, welcome back to the broadcast. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for having me back. I'm happy to be here.
Yay. I ran into Jan at the theater and I said, oh, you know what, Jan? Well, let's get together and do this again. Michael is off this week up in Boston seeing a production of Bridges of Madison County or something, I think he mentioned last week. So, yeah, so he'll be back.
I envy him. I love that show.
I told him, I was like, I'm happy to go. And it looks like they've got some beautiful weather. I mean, yesterday was miserable in the morning, but yesterday afternoon and today looks gorgeous. So hopefully it's a good travel day for him as well. So something happened on Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
The theatrical community, at least the Broadway theatrical community, got together and all stared at their screens at 8:30 a.m., which is an unusual time of the day for anybody involved in theater. The 2017 Tony nominations were announced. So we thought that we would go through them today and talk about, you know, our general feelings about it. So first up, we're talking about the Best Play category, where we have A Doll's House Part 2, Indecent, Oslo, and Sweat. So, Jan, why don't you give us your thoughts on these four nominees?
Well, I haven't yet seen A Doll's House Part 2. I hear good things about it, but I've seen the other three, and actually, I've seen the other three each twice. I saw them when they were off Broadway, and now that they've moved to Broadway. And this is a tough category. I think these are all three terrific plays, terrific shows. They're very different, all dealing with very serious subjects. Indecent, talking about censorship, talking about diversity, and in this instance, the first lesbian kiss that ever appeared on stage in the play God of Vengeance. And Indecent is looking at what happened around that production. Then Oslo, which is about the Oslo Peace Accords, and Sweat, which is Lynn Nottage's now Pulitzer Prize-winning play about the effect of the change in the economy on factory workers in Pennsylvania. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I don't know. What do you think, Peter?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Oslo, because I think that's the least commercial of them. And that is not an irrelevant fact when it comes to the Tonys. What's going to travel well? What's going to do well in the provinces? And in terms of community theater, and this is not irrelevant either, Oslo seems to be an unlikely bet to be produced because it has an enormous cast and it's a great number of men. So if those considerations, and they may not be, but if those are considerations, I think Oslo is the least likely to win in this category. Now, it is true that we are talking about a Pulitzer Prize winner being in the mix, Sweat being the one, as you said, Jan. However, the Tonys and the Pulitzers don't agree very often. Sure, they did with Hamilton, but most of the time they really don't. And one of the reasons why is so many off-Broadway plays wind up winning the Pulitzer that simply don't move to Broadway, like Between Riverside and Crazy and The Flick and Water by the Spoonful. All these didn't come to Broadway. It's very interesting, of course, how many plays start off Broadway. As you had pointed out, Jan, I too have seen all three of those plays twice, because I saw them off Broadway and then when they moved. And we've had plenty of those win Pulitzer Prizes, such as Next to Normal, which started at Second Stage. And so, it is a very tough category. And A Doll's House being the last to open turns out to have a slight advantage because the ones that the most fresh in minds never suffers for being fresh in minds, unless, of course, it stinks, but this is not a case of that. So I don't know. I think A Doll's House may suffer from the fact that it's the shortest of the plays. That sounds strange, but when you're looking at weighty matters in best plays, I think they're going to feel, well, you know, it is based on something else to begin with. Now, that's true of Indecent as well. So, and I somehow I feel Indecent has a tougher time of it as well, because it does deal with censorship, which, of course, is a potent issue. But on the other hand, it's based on, well, it's inspired by a play that really very few people knew about before this came to light. So I think a lot of people still, unlike A Doll's House, which many people know, I'm not saying the entire Broadway tourist community knows what A Doll's House is, but they certainly don't know what God of Vengeance was. So I think it may very well. I'm going to go with Sweat simply because I think it's the play that of the four of them has the best chance of speaking to the rest of America, because the rest of America, much of it anyway, is in serious trouble on this issue. The idea that people are being phased out of their jobs, everybody can relate to that. Certainly theater critics can. And with those circumstances, I think this is the one that is going to squeak by. I wish, they like political elections, we'd find out how every candidate gets for votes, but we don't. But I think it's going to be a squeaker in this category, and I think Sweat is going to emerge.
It may. I think it's going to be close between, again, without having seen A Doll's House, I think it's going to be close between Oslo and Sweat.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's a large cast, it's Lincoln Center, Bart Scher, terrific cast, such a weighty and still contemporary subject.
And a great deal of humor in it, too, to be fair. Yeah, I mean, it's not as if it's a textbook dry thing.
No.
It's a real achievement for getting so much humor into such a serious subject. Still, I don't think there's enough humor to make it a touring show that's going to do very well. And that is not irrelevant where the Tonys are concerned. We're not just talking about worthiness. We're talking about a lot of factors when awards come into play. And this is one of the factors that does always come in.
I haven't seen A Doll's House Part 2 yet. I'm going to see it this week. But we've been talking often about A Doll's House Part 2 on Today on Broadway with Matt Tamanini about the grosses for A Doll's House Part 2 are very, very low. And they're having a big problem selling tickets. And I wonder if – yet it's gotten amazing reviews and people talking about many people wouldn't be surprised if it won Best Play.
No. I wouldn't be surprised.
It'll be interesting to see if the financial aspect of A Doll's House Part 2 as it stands right now on Broadway will come into play with that. The other three, I've seen the other three as well twice now. And it's interesting to me that all of these are very serious dramas with a lot of humor injected into them, which helps us take the drama in its
measure.
With
a spoonful of sugar, right.
Yes.
What we should talk about, too, is what we felt didn't make it that we wish could have made it this season. And I'll go out on a limb here and say that I'm sorry that the play That Goes Wrong didn't get nominated, because I thought it was a terrific evening. And I think it's a show that really deserves much more credit than it seems to have got, because I don't know any human being who hasn't said, I laughed like crazy. I laughed like a seal through the entire thing. We should look at that as well. What isn't in the category, and that would certainly be one for me. Significant Other is another, which was a worthy play. It wasn't really for me. I think it spoke more to millennials, but nevertheless, I think it was a solid piece of writing, and I certainly would have liked to have seen it in there as well. There are times when there are five nominees for plays, and I think if Significant Other had done business and were running, I think we might have seen nominations for it, which we did not a one.
Yeah, I'm not I'm far from a millennial, but I loved that play.
Good.
I loved it both times I saw it, and I was really disappointed that it closed so early, didn't do good business. And because of that, I wasn't surprised that, you know, it didn't get recognized by the Tony Awards. But I thought it was a really good play. I think the other thing that's really interesting is that, with the exception of the play that goes wrong, these are all by American playwrights.
Mm-hmm.
A number of them, Lucas Nath for A Doll's House, Joshua Harmon, I think, for Significant Other, are and J.T. Rogers for Oslo, are young playwrights. They're, I think J.T. Rogers is maybe 40, 41, but the other guys are in their 30s. And so that's really exciting for the, you know,
sure,
future for American theater. And yeah, the two women, and we don't get a lot of women playwrights on Broadway still, the two women, both Pulitzer Prize winners for plays that were produced off-Broadway, it's also great to see them finally getting to Broadway. So I think it's one of, for me, one of the most exciting seasons for plays that we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move forward into the next category, which is Best Musical, where the four nominees are Come From Away, Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, and Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. So, Peter, why don't you give us your take on that?
Well, I think when the season began, nobody would have expected that Come From Away, or perhaps even Natasha, would be nominated, because the obvious slam dunk would have to be War Paint, because there you are with those guys who wrote Grey Gardens. They were so terrific with Grey Gardens, and you have those two ladies in it, and obviously this was going to be a hell of a show, because they'd know how to write for her and come up with wonderful stuff, and wouldn't that be the sun and the moon, and certainly the fact that the book was being written by Doug Wright, who had certainly done well by I Am My Own Wife and many other properties. So I think that that omission was something that nobody saw coming back when the season started, when nobody even knew what Come From Away was, and figured, gee, would Natasha even get here? And I mean, it's going to the Imperial, which is such a big house. How are they going to fill it? Granted, they took out a few rows, but on the other end, they put people on the stage. So it's perhaps, I think, the capacity of the Imperial was even bigger, but they haven't had any problem filling it, have they? So that's really been something that's been impressive. But also, I think we would have thought that Anastasia would have shown up in the mix, because after all, there you also have our Broadway blue chippers. When we talk about Terrence McNally and Steve Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, so I think those are the two that were really the most surprised didn't have something happen. I don't think we expected much from Bandstand, because again, no famous names in it. Involved, with the possible exception of Laura Osnes, who has really made a wonderful career for herself in musical theater, which we didn't see coming when we heard that she was going to be in the Grease revival. We thought she was a joke, winning the TV contest. And the joke has been on us, because she's certainly been extraordinarily good. So I'm going to semi-blow my own horn here for talking about the fact that Amelie got no Tony nominations, which is what I had predicted. But, of course, I don't think there were many people who saw the show who thought that they'd get very much, if anything. So it was an easy prediction to make. And I don't know if Amelie was one that people were saying all through the season, oh, this is going to be a winner. But still, for me, the omissions of Anastasia and War Paint turned out to be a surprise as the season went on. And I'm sorry, it's a rules thing, isn't it? There have to be so many musicals before they can do five nominations. Is that right?
It has to be that the vote for the margin between the fourth and fifth
is
three votes.
I see.
And so apparently it wasn't within three votes for whatever was the fifth.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, because the more the merrier, and certainly to be craven here for advertising purposes, it's always nice to say best Tony nominee. Of course, they always say Tony nominee, even if they, get a lighting nomination, but still, it's it would have been nice to see five in that category, because certainly while the other shows were not barn burners, you know, there were assets in them, and why not spread the wealth?
I'm gonna go the other way. I think the nominators really got this right. I do think that these were the four best shows of best musicals of the season. And I think what's also interesting is that they're recognizing new voices, people who are doing something different, pushing the edge. And I have to say that although I had, well, I had different responses to Amelie, Anastasia, Warpaint, all of them struck me as old-fashioned. When I was sitting there, I thought, this could have been 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I didn't think that about any of these, with the slight exception of Groundhog Day. But these are all new and exciting voices, new ways of doing Broadway musical. And
well, that's fair. That's fair. To me, old-fashioned is not necessarily a pejorative. And but all things considered, you do have a fine point there that we are talking about people who have just had one or two shows, if that at all. So so yes, I certainly concede that point. And it is very nice that the people who are new to the scene are certainly getting their acclaim.
So, all right. Next up in the next category, we have a best book of a musical, where Come From Away, Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, and Natasha Pierre also have shown up. Seems very similar to the previous category of best musicals. So, Jan, what do you think?
It's really unusual, I think. Peter will know better than I, but I think it's really unusual where the nominators are just so convinced that a group of shows are really the best. They nominated these same four shows for Best Musical, Best Book, Best Original Score, Best Direction of a Musical. They said these are the best shows. they just really gave all their love to these four shows. And I think in terms of best book, books are always so hard. They're just so hard. And I could pick, you know, nitpick with each of these nominations, but I do think of the group, the 13 musicals, new musicals that came along, these were the best books, with the possible exception of A Bronx Tale, which got no love, which gets no love from anyone except for ticket buyers. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was a pretty solid book too.
So the love from the ticket buyers is really the most important love, isn't it now?
Isn't it?
All right. Peter, what do you think about the book category?
Well, one has to be impressed that both Come From Away and Dear Evan Hansen came from original ideas and not from source material. Now, granted, Dave Malloy had source material, but he had a big job in getting War and Peace into the manageable form that he did. And of course, he only took some of it, and who can blame him? A musical version of War and Peace used to be a Compton and Green joke, but here we are with a musical that actually did it. So it's an adaptation, but it's as impressive a feat as starting from scratch as both Come From Away and Dear Evan Hansen did. So, you know, Groundhog Day certainly did well enough in adapting its screenplay, and the same guy did it, Danny Rubin. But I do think the edge is going to go to one of the original ones. I'm not sure which. It's so interesting with Come From Away, which, as I say, came out of nowhere. But the thing is, I'm not hearing nearly as much about it as I'm hearing about the other shows. It got certainly its share of nominations, but even so, I'm hearing much more excitement over Dear Evan Hansen and Natasha and Pierre than I'm hearing it come from away. So peaking at the right time is extraordinarily important, and we'll see if that's going to be a problem. But, you know, I didn't mention A Bronx Tale, Jan. I'm so glad you did, because I went to see it again recently, and it's in such wonderful shape. And I'm very sorry that it got, as you say, no love at all, at all, at all. And this is a year when so many shows that are still running got no nominations. Usually, at the very least, Bones are thrown. really, the Bones were pretty much kept. And but I would have been fine with A Bronx Tale being in there, even though I don't think it's a masterpiece. But it's certainly a worthy piece of writing, and I'm sorry that it's not there.
All right. So next up, we have Best Original Score, Musical Lyrics Written for the Theater, and we have three of the four here. Come From Away, Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, the musical. So, Jan, what do you think about this?
And not Tasha Pierre.
And Tasha Pierre is there, too.
Oh, I missed it. It is Natasha Pierre. There it is. So, Jan, thanks for the correction. And what did you think about it?
It's the same gang. Again, as I said, the nominators thought these were the top shows. And the music in all of them is very different from what we traditionally think of as the Broadway sound. And I don't want to slight the traditional Broadway sound. It's what I grew up on and still love. But it is exciting to have new sounds being introduced into the mix. And we've got sort of a rock sound from Natasha Pierre, a more roots music type of sound in Come From Away, also a sort of pop rock sound in Dear Evan Hansen. So these are very contemporary scores. And I think it's interesting, particularly Dear Evan Hansen and Natasha Pierre are bringing in younger audiences, because these are sounds that younger people can relate to, that they're used to hearing. I'm going to go out on no limb at all and say that I think Dear Evan Hansen is going to get this. I think the theater community has just been waiting to celebrate Pasek and Paul, and justifiably, I think they're incredibly talented.
Peter, what did you think?
Yeah, they're going to win, and the fact that they won an Oscar certainly doesn't hurt either. And winning for the almost Oscar-winning film. So the nomination I'm disappointed in is Groundhog Day, mostly because of the lyrics, because I'm interested in perfect rhymes and correct stresses on syllables, as any listener knows. And immediately to me, Tim Minchin is out. And this is where I would have put Anastasia, because these guys do abide by those rules. And I guess I have to put rules in quotation marks, because they don't seem to be rules anymore. But I would have liked to have seen Alan Menken and Glenn Slater in here, too, also because Glenn Slater observes the rules, but also because I think that's a very evocative score, and I'm surprised.
We're talking A Bronx Tale, yes?
Yeah. I'm sorry they didn't get noticed, too. So that would have been impressive to me. I'm also interested, you know, even though you're talking about the contemporary sounds and getting young people into the theater, I'm wondering, I have no idea. I suspect there aren't that many, but I hope there are young people going to Dolly. Maybe they're not because it's so expensive. Maybe they're not because they have no interest in it. It may just be all the old timers who are reliving their youth going to see Dolly, but certainly Dolly is having no problem selling tickets.
No.
And I'm hoping that there are young people who want to see it and say, oh, this is a good sound too. It just doesn't have to be rock-tinged music that I like. I can like music that certainly represents a Broadway sound, when Broadway had a specific sound and was cherished for it.
All right. In the category of Best Revival of a Play, we have August Wilson's Jitney, John Guare's Six Degrees of Separation, Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes, and can we say Noel Coward's Present Laughter? I mean, it seems like everybody else's name is part of the title here, but it's just Present Laughter officially, according to the Tony folks. So, Peter, what did you think?
No problem with the nominations as far as the four are concerned. I wouldn't have been brokenhearted for a tenth of a second if the price had been in there too, because I certainly thought that was a worthwhile piece of theater, and especially because even though this was my sixth production of The Price, dating back not quite to the original, I have to admit, I didn't see it on Broadway when it first came out in 1968, but I did see a touring company the following year, and which was a pretty impressive one. But as listeners know, I did feel that Danny DeVito may not have been somebody who convinced me he was 90 years old, but certainly was the most hilarious one that I had ever seen. But I certainly didn't expect the Cherry Orchard to get in there. And, of course, The Glass Menagerie was one that was tremendously controversial. And I'm not surprised that that didn't make it either, because there was such controversy involved, although I admired so much of it. But the one thing that everybody's been talking about in this category, and the one surprise really that for many people, is the fact that The Front Page didn't get in here. And and The Front Page was really an extraordinary thing from the vantage point of scope. The fact that it got produced, and it got produced so lovingly, and got produced with so many people, and the care and attention lavished on it would suggest that another I'm not taking issue with the four that got nominated. I love them all, but I'm surprised that The Front Page didn't get into this category. Glass Menagerie, I can understand Les Liaisons Dangereuses not being there. I'm all set there. But I suppose if The Front Page had been nominated, and let's say Little Foxes had not been, I would have been talking about that. So it's, again, there can only be so many nominees, and so be it.
Jan, how about you?
I guess at the beginning of the season, people would have just assumed that The Front Page would be in the mix. And I'm not quite sure why it isn't. The other the shows that did get nominated are certainly worthy. I think the one that has the slight edge is Jitney, August Wilson's Jitney. I thought it was an excellent production. It's the last of the August Wilson 10-part cycle to be done on Broadway. Each and every one of them has been nominated for Tony, and most of them have won. The thing that's a little odd about it, though, is that it is in the Best Revival category, but it's never been done on Broadway before. But whatever the rules are.
Yeah, that's a confusing one about if there's ever been a major production of it before, even if it was off, even if it was not on Broadway. It's then a revival. It's a strange thing that I always wonder about. I just saw Six Degrees of Separation the other night, and I don't think I would hold it up against the same level of all these things, and I'm sad because I might be in the minority, but I really like the Glass Menagerie revival. So we'll have to see what happens in this one. In the next category, the Best Revival of a Musical, we have Falsettos, Hello Dolly, and Miss Saigon. So Jan, what do you think about this category?
Well, leading up to the season, there was a television ad for Hello Dolly, and the complete ad went, Bette Midler, Hello Dolly, what more do you need to know? And that's still applicable. this Hello, Dolly. I saw it last week, and it's the first time I have ever seen standing ovation for an entrance. I had
Gavin Creel really does pull it off, doesn't he?
It is a joyous, just delight. It's just all dessert, and it's yummy. And it's also, I think, terrific for Jerry Zaks. It's like Jerry Zaks was such a big deal in mid-80s through the mid-90s, was just doing hit after hit. And then sort of, I think, went into a fallow period. And he's come back this season with two really strong shows, A Bronx Tale, which he co-directed with Robert De Niro, which didn't get Tony recognition, but as we've already talked about, is selling well, and which it seems from just this conversation, both Peter and I liked. And Hello, Dolly. There's no mystery here. The other shows, Falsettos and Miss Saigon, it's nice to be nominated. It's going to be Hello, Dolly.
It will be. Peter, what did you think?
I think if Betsy Hockhauser, who I saw do Dolly in the Bronx once about 20 years ago, had been the lead in this revival, it would still deserve Best Revival, because the point is that it's so lovingly produced. It's beautiful to look at. Mm-hmm. The sets are almost as good as the original, and the backdrops are even better. And the drops for the in one are exquisite to look at. So as you say, Jan, Jerry Zaks did a phenomenal job of replicating what Gower Champion did with a few extra touches of his own. So yes, of course it's going to win. But what I find interesting about this category is the absence of Andrew Lloyd Webber, because Cats was eligible as well, and so was Sunset Boulevard, both Andrew Lloyd Webber shows, and apparently they didn't make enough of an impression to be there. And Cats has been a solid seller. It just passed its 300th performance. And, but the other factor, of course, is what would have happened if Sunday in the Park with George had been eligible. Now, apparently, again, the rules of how many revivals were there of musicals this year. In fact, there were six. And if Sunday in the Park with George had been eligible, therefore, which of these would have bit the dust? And I'm sure it would have been either Miss Saigon or Falsettos. Falsettos because it's already closed and memories are short. And Miss Saigon because a lot of people feel that this production is a bit of a disappointment and isn't selling well. But that's all speculation, because the producers took out Sunday in the Park with George from any consideration. And so that had to be a factor, and I am sure that Falsettos, and especially Miss Saigon, which is still running, are very happy that Sunday in the Park with George was not eligible.
Peter, do you think that will set a precedent going forward, that other producers will look at and weigh the cost of getting in all the voters and take their shows out of consideration?
I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised. I think what may happen is the productions that certainly aren't selling the seats will say come one, come all. But, I don't think it's impossible. After all, when the producers started premium seats, it wasn't long before perhaps Perfect Crime has premium seats. I wouldn't be surprised. But, so once an idea is put into place, it stays. And that can work for the good, too, because God bless Rent for doing the first two rows letting young people in and not just making them feel like 12th class citizens by sitting in the last row of the balcony, which is where so many of us started when we were starting out and didn't have that much money. good ideas, bad ideas certainly can take seed, and I won't be surprised if that happens more often.
A few things that I wanted to mention here, tangential to our nominations, are: have either one of you seen this Harry Potter thing in London?
No.
No. So the Harry Potter folks who are going to take over the Lyric on 42nd Street have announced that they are not selling tickets through Ticketmaster or Telecharge. Right. They are selling it only through their website, which is a real departure for the Broadway community. And if the Harry Potter play is not widely embraced here by the critics, they could easily take themselves out of contention for any Tony sure. Award next year, because they don't need the Tony Awards to sell that show. Sure. So I wonder if Sunday in the Park with Jake is a leader here. Jan, did you see Sunday in the Park with Jake?
Not on Broadway. I saw it at Encores.
You saw it mm-hmm. at Encores. Okay. Mm-hmm. And did you feel it was a worthy transfer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was really sorry, particularly that Anna Lee wasn't able to get into the mix. Yeah.
Anna Lee Ashford had a wonderful dot and certainly would have been coming up in some of these categories that we're talking about in a few minutes. And then the second point was that a few weeks ago, I think it was a few weeks ago, the Hamilton folks in New York, in Chicago, and San Francisco played to student-only audiences. And mm-hmm. so many of these students, this will be their first experience seeing a Broadway show. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
As Peter was mentioning, you know, the cost of going to a Broadway show is not really affordable to many young people. And these...
Our old people.
Yeah, poor old people. And to have 5,000 students come in to see a production of Hamilton, the hottest show, or, you know, possibly around the world right now, to see that as their first show.
Terrific.
I wonder what that will bring to us in 15 years or 20 years, and if we're going to hear somebody get up on the stage and say, my first show I saw was the student invite audience of Hamilton, and how that will affect us down the road.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Every year I go to the Jonathan Larson Awards, and these are awards that Jonathan Larson, the composer of Rent, his family set up to honor him. As everyone knows, he died before the day of the preview of his show when it was down at New York Theatre Workshop. And so they honor young composers and book writers each year. And granted, it is the Larson Awards, but there is such sincerity when these award winners talk about what Rent meant to them mm-hmm. and how all over the country, you know, kids in their rooms playing their records or tapes, or I guess now just streaming, listening to this, and it's speaking to them, and they're wanting to do the same thing. And I'm just sure that Hamilton is going to have that same effect.
All right. The next category up is Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Play. Dennis Arndt in Heisenberg, Chris Cooper, A Doll's House Part II, Kari Hawkins, 6 Degrees of Separation, Kevin Kline, Present Laughter, Jefferson Mays in Oslo. So, Peter, why don't you start us off with this?
Well, the obvious omission, and again, it closed too early, was Gideon Glick and Significant Other, who gave a magnificent performance, magnificent. And it's really sad that he's not there. And considering the fact that Chris Cooper's role seems to me to be a supporting role in the sense that he doesn't come in until late in the play. And I really felt bad that Gideon Glick wasn't there. That, to me, is the most obvious omission. And for me, Kari Hawkins, I'm not saying he was bad, but he just seemed too old to me to be playing this part. So I would have replaced him with Gideon Glick. I have no issue with the other ones. It was nice to see Dennis Arndt remembered, given the fact that Heisenberg wasn't a high-profile experience. yes, Mary Louise Parker Parker was in it, but it was a limited run, and everybody knew it was a limited run. And I guess, you know, an act of God, you know, the fact that it was so early in the season, only 6 days into the season, but Sean Hayes was awfully good in it and certainly had to carry the whole show, even though he had two guys assisting him. But you know, that's what I would have done with this category. I would have replaced Corey Hawkins with Gideon Glick.
Jan, how about you?
I pretty much agree with everything Peter said there. I was delighted that Dennis Arndt got remembered. I think he's 77 now or 78 years old. This was his Broadway debut. And I thought he was just really lovely in this two-hander with Mary Louise Parker. I also, though, liked Richard Roxburgh, who acted against Cate Blanchett in The Present. Basically, he was the thing I liked in The Present. But she got remembered, but she is Cate Blanchett. Nothing else from that production got remembered, and so he slid away. I also agree with Peter about Corey Hawkins that I don't know, maybe it was that he seemed too old. There was nothing he did wrong.
But it didn't
hit me in the way that I expected to be hit. But Gideon Glick just wiped me out each time, and I agree. Mm-hmm. I just I'm so sorry that that show got overlooked. I assume it's going to be done all over the country, and particularly at the community theater level. Lots of fun parts for people, but I didn't see anything wrong with this production, and I don't know why it just didn't land. I don't know.
All right, in the next category, Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Play, we have Cate Blanchett, as we just mentioned, Jennifer Ely in Oslo, Sally Field in The Glass Menagerie, Laura Linney in The Little Foxes, and Laurie Metcalf in A Doll's House Part 2. So, Jan, why don't you start us with that?
I'm at a disadvantage here because all of the buzz seems to be that Laurie Metcalf is the lead in this, and I am only going to be seeing A Doll's House Part 2 this coming week. So I don't know. I'm glad that Sally Field got recognized. This production of The Glass Menagerie did not work for me. But I've read about how much she wanted to do it on Broadway. I saw the production that she did a few years ago in Washington, where she was really, really wonderful. So I'm glad that she got recognized for a play that means so much to her. And the other, you know, the other ladies are all fine, fine actresses, but I'm really looking forward to the Laurie Metcalf,
Peter, what did you think?
I truly believe that when Lucas wrote A Doll's House Part 2 and then he saw it on stage, he said, wow, this is even better than I thought it was, because she brings so much to this. But in terms of who's been omitted, it's interesting, isn't it, that Laura Linney got nominated in this category for The Little Foxes and not in the other when she plays Birdie. And similarly speaking, as we'll talk soon, Cynthia Nixon got nominated for her Birdie, but
No. They had to be. Because it was
opening night.
So they had to be done this way.
You're right. I'm sorry, I forgot that. I apologize. However, for my money, whatever it's worth, these are absolutely correct. I thought Laura Linney was the superior Regina, and I thought that Cynthia Nixon was the superior Birdie. So justice is served, as far as I'm concerned. I'm all set there. In terms of omissions, well, you know, again, omissions, I guess the one that I would have liked to have seen more than anything else is somebody had to be the lead in Indecent, and those people were all so wonderful that I would have liked to have seen something happen there. I don't know if Lindsay Mendez was considered a leading performer in Significant Other, but she is terrific. I have adored her since I saw her in the almost one woman show that Sherry Renee Scott did some years ago. I think she just has a brightness and light to her that is just superb. And whenever I hear she's in a show, I always look forward to her being in it, and I look forward to going as soon as I possibly can. So she's a particular favorite of mine. And but again, I don't know what category that they wanted her in. But to me, she was the leading lady of Significant Other. And for me, it would have been significant to have her in there. However, I have no problem at all with any of the nominees whatsoever. So somebody had to be omitted, and that was that.
The young woman in Indecent, Katrina Link, who seems to me is really charismatic. She was also in the off-Broadway production of The Band's Visit that played down at the Atlantic Theater Company. And there's talk about bringing that to Broadway next season. And if they do, I think she's going to be a major contender. I think she's going to be a major presence. She's just a really wonderful actress and just a commanding presence on stage.
Great. So,
yeah.
Okay, in the next category, we have Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical. We have Christian Borle for Falsettos. And not Charlie. Josh Groban in Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Andy Carlin, Groundhog Day. David Hyde Pierce in Hello, Dolly. And Ben Platt, Dear Evan Hansen. So, Peter, what did you think?
Well, in terms of omissions, I don't like Charlie, but I thought Christian Borle gave his all. And sometimes it's not often, but sometimes they do have nominations that involve two shows. And that would have been fine with me if he had been nominated for that as well, if they had given him a double play. I like Nick Cordero very much in a Bronx Tale, very much indeed. So that would have been fine with me. But the real omission to me, by far, was Corey Cott not being nominated for Bandstand. I think he is sensational beyond belief. I think he has wonderful charisma. And for that matter, and we'll talk about Laura Austin soon, but the chemistry they have, it's one of the best couplings I've seen that I really believe two people should be together. And also, I've mentioned the fact that when I saw the show at Paper Mill, I didn't like it very much because his character was very abrasive. They've certainly taken care of that. And now that isn't a situation at all. So to me, that was the biggest omission. But a squeak behind, I do believe that John Briones from Miss Saigon is amazingly good. And I was very sorry to see him not involved in the mix because he does such a wonderful job of getting the sleaziness of that character and understanding who that man really is, this opportunist who will flatter anybody. I mean, the moment for me that was really wonderful is when he's in the second act, when he sees John and acts as if he was the one that he loved the most because he needs something from him. So a very effective performance. And it's a shame that it didn't happen. And again, Sunset Boulevard, Michael Xavier, I thought was terrific as Joe Gillis, just terrific. So I'm sorry that that didn't happen. But once again, we have to wonder what would have happened had indeed Jake Gyllenhaal been eligible for Sunday in the Park with George. Who would have been out of this category? I guess it would have been David Hyde Pierce because it's not really quite a leading role, even though they've tried to make it one by giving him an extra song. But I think he would have walked the plank if indeed Jake Gyllenhaal had been eligible for Sunday in the Park.
All right. Jan, what did you think?
Well, I think they got it fine. I didn't like Michael Xavier at all. I really,
a lot of people didn't.
I really didn't. It seemed to me that his performance as Joe Gillis, this sort of gigolo, if you will, to an older movie actress, I didn't get any of the self-loathing that character is supposed to feel as he gives in to becoming her boy toy. It seemed to me throughout the performance that he was quite happy to be a boy toy. And so that sort of undermined it for me. But in this, with the nominees that we have, it's clearly going to be a battle to the finish between Ben Platt and Andy Karl. People are really moved by Ben Platt's just totally raw emotional performance. And Andy Karl just, I think even before his accident, mm-hmm. Where he hurt his knee during one of the preview performances, that Andy Karl just lifts that show on his shoulders, and he's just charming and engaging. And I think also he's just someone that the Broadway community loves because he's just worked his way up. He's just a good guy, and so I think it's going to be interesting to see which of these two do they do it, you know, give it to the new star on the rise, or do they celebrate the vet who's just been there and is now having his moment in the spotlight? It's going to be interesting.
On the next category, we're talking about best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical. We have Danae Benton for Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812, Christine Ebersole in War Paint, Patti LuPone in War Paint, Bette Midler in Hello, Dolly, and Eva Noble-Zeta in Miss Saigon. What a category. So, Jan, what do you think?
Well, again, we know who's going to win in this category. So, but I was really pleased to see the young women in there, Danae Benton and Eva Noblezada. Lovely to see two new talents, women of color, getting this kind of recognition. I suppose there are some people who are sorry, and me a little bit among them, about Laura Osnes not getting recognition for Bandstand. I think it was the show itself that hurt its leads. It's doing shakily at the box office, and I think the show is somewhat shaky. Actually, I think the show itself is a really interesting show about returning veterans from World War II and their ability to adjust and to deal with PTSD. But Andy Blankenbuehler, who did both the direction and choreography, probably best known as the choreographer for Hamilton, that the choreography was terrific and that he really felt secure there. This is the second show, I gather, that he's directed, and I just didn't think he had command of the show, and I think that hurt the chances of his leads.
Peter, what did you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing Christy Altomare in this category for her Anastasia, because I thought she was very effective, really had a hold on the character. But again, a tough year. And we all knew going in the three of these slots were absolute locks, that being, of course, Bette Midler, Christine Ebersole, and Patti LuPone. There was no doubt that they were going to be in. They were certainly not going to be denied. But again, as I mentioned a moment ago, Laura Osnes certainly belongs in this category as well, because she's doing a hell of a job with that show. And so we had seven really memorable performances in lead roles in musicals this year.
Do you think the War Paint ladies deserved nominations this time around? Both legends, both terrific talents. But do you think for this show?
That may be really the toughest question that anybody can ask this season. You know, I see your point. I think I'm getting with you're both implying and inferring. I have a feeling if there were a different director on this show, I blame him. And here I am blaming a guy who is the only human being to steer two different musicals to Pulitzer Prizes. So, you know, who am I to criticize Michael Greif, who also became a major force because of Rent alone. But, I mean, then again, doing Next to Normal, which is a beloved show with so many people. There you are. Well, the thing is that I do feel if there were a different director in this show, that we would have no doubt that Christine Ebersole and Patti LuPone should be in there, because I just don't think they were showcased to their best advantage with the direction. So that's my feeling. I think there would have been a lot of talk if they hadn't been nominated. Certainly there would have been a lot of talk, but I don't think that it would have been one of the great injustices of Tony's history.
As a pair, right? I mean, you couldn't do one without the other.
Well, that's been known to happen. You think that it's going to be, it has to be a pairing. But I think there have been exceptions to that rule. But still, they are who they are, and attention must be paid.
Yes.
In the category of best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play, we have Michael Aronov. Did I have that correct? From Oslo, Danny DeVito and Arthur Miller's The Price, Nathan Lane, The Front Page, Richard Thomas in The Little Foxes, and John Douglas Thompson in August Wilson's Jitney. So, Peter, what do you think?
Well, I'm very glad that John Douglas Thompson got in there, because he certainly has been an off-Broadway powerhouse for the last few years. And whenever I hear John Douglas Thompson is in a show, I'm up for it tremendously. The one I would have liked to have seen in here, because he was so different from what I've ever seen him before, was Michael McCain in The Little Foxes. This is the guy who played Edna in Hairspray. He's the one who took over for Harvey Fierstein. And here he is, almost unrecognizable, not just because he has a beard, because he became that character so impressively that it was a while before I realized it was he. You know, I certainly knew he was in it like 2 weeks before I saw it, you know, and okay. But it wasn't, it didn't really make an impression until I realized suddenly I saw in his face, you know, that was Michael McCain. But he was magnificent. The other magnificent one, I think, was Anthony Azizi for playing the finance minister for Palestine Liberation in Oslo. I thought he was magnificent as well. And I would have been very happy to see him in this category as well. But it wasn't to be. I have no issues with the rest of them whatsoever.
Jan.
I think this is a tough category. I mean, I agree with Peter about Michael McCain, but I think I might have substituted him for Richard Thomas, to be quite honest. But I think it's going to be between Aronoff, DeVito, and Nathan Lane. Nathan Lane just brought The Front Page alive whenever he was on that stage, even when he was quiet. I mean, he wasn't saying anything. He was hysterical. You couldn't take your eyes off him. Danny DeVito was wonderful surprise. I mean, this is his stage debut, and he was on that stage like he had been on that stage for the last 30 years. I thought he was just terrific. So I don't know. It's a tough category to call on who's going to get this. A lot of people really loved Michael Aronoff's performance, and I thought he was really terrific when he was down in the Mitzi Newhouse when they moved it upstairs to the Vivian Beaumont. I thought he had begun to read his notices, and he was a little too much for my taste. It was a bit more undisciplined than it had been.
Jan, exactly. I loved it in the Mitzi Newhouse, and it moved upstage, and I was like, why is everybody yelling at me?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole entire show from the first moment for me in Oslo upstairs was everybody started at a 10 and had nowhere to go. I mean, just yelling during the whole performance. Anyway, it's not a review of Oslo, but I couldn't agree with you more. Wow. And he's an incredible talent. I love him. I loved him. So, best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play. Joanna Day for Sweat. Jane Houdyshell in A Doll's House Part 2. Cynthia Nixon in The Little Foxes. Condola Rashad in A Doll's House Part 2. And Michelle Wilson in Sweat. A lot of doubles up in here. So,
Jane,
what do you think?
Well, again, I'm at a disadvantage because of A Doll's House Part 2. I thought... all the other three women were all quite good. I was terribly moved by Cynthia Nixon's second act speech in The Little Foxes, as the coward and alcoholic sister-in-law who looks at her life and realizes how wasted it has been. And I thought she was just really heartrending in that role. But again, I'm interested to hear what Peter says, because he has seen A Doll's House Part 2.
Peter, what do you think?
Oh, they're both terrific. They're wonderful performers. And Condola Rashad has really shown us that she has the stuff. She has good genes. After all, her mother is such a terrific actress, and I don't know if she'd be a good linebacker or football player as her daddy was. But she's wonderful, and so is Jane, who won last year. And as you may know, the policy of the Miss America is if Miss Massachusetts wins this year, she ain't going to win next year. So, of course, we've had many Tony winners win two in a row, so that's perhaps not as relevant. But in terms of omissions, I felt bad for Katrina Lenk here, because the scene she has, especially with Azina Version, when they're exploring their who they are, is really a very, very touching one. And for that scene alone, I think it would have been wonderful to see her in there. I also felt bad Kate Burton for President Laughter, who really had that high comedy performance down pat. I would like to have seen her in there too. So those are my omissions that I felt bad about. But it's not often that three plays get represented in five categories, and that's what happens here. So I'm glad for the Sweat ladies. They're both quite wonderful. So, but if Kate Burton or Katrina Lenk had stuck in there, I'd be all right too.
In the next category, best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, we have Gavin Creel for Hello, Dolly, Mike Faced, and Dear Evan Hansen. Did I get it wrong?
No, you got it right.
I said it two different ways, so right. One of them might be right.
Right.
Let's hope. It may be a third.
One that I do know is Andrew Rannells. Rannells. In falsettos. Lucas Steele and Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812 in that shocking blonde hair, and Brandon Urenowitz in falsettos. So, Peter, what did you think of this category?
Well, the one that surprised me, the biggest shock of them all to me, was Andrew, because I thought he was not very good in falsettos. I was very glad that Brandon Urenowitz was remembered. Mm-hmm. I thought that was terrific, and I was very, very happy with that. I was surprised to see Mike in this get a nomination, but I have no issue with it, none whatsoever. But going back to A Bronx Tale, you know, even though he's not on stage very much, I would have given it to the kid. I thought that kid was really quite wonderful. Hudson Lavero was his name. And it's one of those performances that when the kid grows up and suddenly there's a new actor taking his place, you feel bad you're not going to see him anymore. And I would have definitely put him in this category of best featured actor in a musical. So he would have been one of my choices, certainly. So I felt bad that he wasn't there. And there are times when I say, well, shouldn't one of the cats be in there? And then I tried to thinking what cat it might be, and I got them up. So I guess that does defeat that. I'm one of the people who very much liked, very few people did, Alistair Brammer as Chris in Miss Saigon. And I knew he wasn't going to get nominated because so many people had different opinions from mine. But I liked him quite a bit.
Jan, what do you think?
I, like Peter, was really happy about Brandon Uranowitz because I thought he gave a different twist to the character that really worked. I mean, he was nerdy as he should be, but he was also sexy, and you could, you know, get why she was with him. As for people who were passed over, I'm going to throw into the mix Douglas Sills in War Paint. I actually liked both him and John Dossett as the men in the lives of these two cosmetics divas, Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden. And there was a couple of numbers that they shared, and I thought Douglas Sills was really quite moving in them. I don't know. I think in this category, you know, Mike Face might pull it out, partially because he's a new face, partially because of all of the love for dear Evan Hansen. That's where I am on that one.
Well, it's interesting to be, we'll find out if we have like a freight train type of thing where if one show seems to be winning everything, whether it'll, people will get pulled along in categories that wouldn't necessarily have been in a vacuum, but we'll have to see about that. The last category we're going to talk about this morning is Best Performance by an Actress in a Featured Role in a Musical, where we have Kate Baldwin in Hello, Dolly!, Stephanie J. Block in Falsettos, Jen Colella in Come From Away, Rachel Bay Jones in Dear Evan Hansen, and Mary Beth Peel in Anastasia. So, Jan, tell us what you thought.
I think it's a solid category. I think the only person I might have thrown into the mix is, I think it's Carolyn O'Connor. Is that right for Anastasia? Yeah, Carolyn O'Connor as the Countess Lily, sort of assistant, a lady in waiting to the Dowager Empress, Mary Beth Peel's Dowager Empress, but they put Mary Beth Peel as the Dowager Empress in that category. But for me, the lead person here, and not because of any groundswell for Dear Evan Hansen, is Rachel Bay Jones. I think she is sort of the quiet anchor of that piece, playing the mother, single mother, who really cares about her son, but because she's working so hard to care for him, can't give him the time and attention that he needs. And her second act song is just heartbreaking. And I think she's going to take it.
Okay, Peter, what did you think?
Well, to me, Rachel Bay Jones is somebody that we have to pay attention to for a different reason. We hear so many times that we don't have personalities today, distinctive personalities, that in the old days the real stars had a quality that was unique. And I think Rachel Bay Jones does. I think she showed that in Pippin, which was a controversial performance too, but I adored her. She has a quirkiness that I don't see in anybody else. And so I treasure her, and I'm very fine if she wins. The one I'm going to mention is a possible omission, a show we haven't mentioned at all in any way, shape, or form, and that's Margot Siebert in In Transit, who I thought was really wonderful as the aspiring actress who was temping and going on auditions on her lunch break, and how difficult that was for her. So I thought she was really quite wonderful. I thought she was really quite wonderful in Rocky, too, last year. So I feel bad that both times that she's been around on a Broadway show that she could have been nominated and hasn't been yet. But I really can't say that I have an issue with these other nominees. And I like Mary Beth Peale quite a bit for Anastasia. And I wonder if she might possibly win simply because she's been a pro for a long time. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, she was Yul Brynner's leading lady in that revival of The King and I.
Yes.
Way back when. Not the first
original
revival.
Yes. No.
No, not even the first revival.
The last one.
Right, but she's been around for a while, and she's also a lovely lady, and that doesn't hurt in your chances either. But Jen Colella could sneak in, too, because she's the one who really stood out, as you can tell from the fact that she's the only one who got the nomination from Come From Away, but also she's the only one who has a solo. Right, exactly. You know, so that's an issue as well, too. But she's pretty beloved by the Broadway community as well. So, and so is Stephanie J. Block. So,
yeah.
And so is Kate Baldwin. Looking at it now, I will admit that I've never spoken to Rachel Bay Jones, but I have spoken to the other ladies, and I've done interviews with them, and I can say that they're all wonderful, wonderful people. So that factor may help any one of them. And I hope when I meet Rachel Bay Jones that I'll think she's lovely, too. And, of course, if she's hearing this podcast and if I'm comparing her to the great ladies of the Broadway theater of yesteryear, I think she'll think I'm awfully bright. So I'm fine with whoever wins in this category.
All right. So before the three of us head out to the Red Door for our Sunday morning spa ritual, I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of Broadway Radio, and there's a subscribe link that each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. Of course, you don't have to listen to us in iTunes. You can listen to us in many ways. One of the ways is the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your Android device. And get a stream to you. iHeartRadio also plays us. Google Play Store plays us. And TuneIn plays us. So you can hear us on your Amazon Echo or other types of devices like that. Broadway World Radio plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Contact information for Peter, for Jan, and for me can be found at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as links to some of the things we talked about today. So, Peter, what do we have for last week's answer to the trivia?
All right. Last week I asked, in Michael Stewart's book for Hello, Dolly, he has a character mention a 19th century stage star who turned up as an actual character in one of his later shows. Who is this former luminary? Well, in Hello, Dolly, Mrs. Levi says about Cornelius Hackle, who took the horses out of Jenny Lind's carriage and pulled her through the streets? Jenny Lind turned up as a character in Barnum, which Michael Stewart was involved in some years later. Josh Ellis was the first to get it, followed by Jack Leshner, Sam Gonzalez, Donald Tessioni, and Brigadoon. Now, for the new one, because we recently celebrated Sheldon Harnick's 93rd birthday, let's do a question that involves two of his shows. First, in The Apple Tree, there's a song called In Gaul, meaning the country most remembered from Julius Caesar's commentary on the Gallic Wars. However, Harnick has used the expression In Gaul earlier in his career, but in a very different context and a different spelling. Tell me in what song and what show the other In Gaul showed up.
All right. So if you have an idea what Peter's answer is, please email us at trivia@broadwayradio.com, and we'll let you know if you are on the right Trek. So on behalf of Jan Simpson and Peter Felicia, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Videos This Week on Broadway. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.